The date is July 2nd, 1986, and we're watching Big Trouble in Little China. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past that nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Wang Chi to my Jack Burton.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So, this week, Colin approached me. He said that he had found the movie Big Trouble in Little China at a garage sale and said, you know, this seems like something that might have been up your alley. And I said, I think I might have seen that one, but I'm pretty sure I haven't. When I went to watch it, I realized I haven't watched it. So this is a movie that neither Colin and I have seen, but we had so much fun when we both discovered a movie for the first time doing Roadhouse that we thought, who gives a shit? It's our show. We can make up the rules. You know, let's just do a movie we haven't seen but have always wanted a goddamn excuse to watch. So here we go. This week we are looking back at July 1986 when the movies in theaters were Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Karate Kid Part 2, Ruthless People, Labyrinth, and of course our movie for today, Big Trouble in Little China, which earned, ready for it, $11.1 million on a $25 million budget. And fun fact, 8 days after this movie came out, Wyatt Russell, who we may know as Fakey Captain America and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, he was born.
Oh, yes. Well, I have another fun fact, because 4 days after this movie came out, yours truly, Colin Stewart, was born into this world.
Well, there we go. So that was a big week for the Russell / Stewart community.
Yeah, exactly. it's kind of fitting that this movie and Roadhouse are the two that we both hadn't watched, because probably for the majority of my life, I always confuse Patrick Swayze and Kurt Russell.
Oh, okay.
I've never known which one was which or which one was in which movie.
It's kind of like when you get Rupert Everett and Dolmet Mulroney. Like, those are two where it's like they're interchangeable as well.
Yeah. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead. So if you don't want to be blinded with spoilers like the light coming from Lopan's mouth and eyes, then please hit pause. Go watch it and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, well, again, I have a few. I always like finding multiples when I can. The first one is, adventure doesn't come any bigger.
Okay.
Next up, we've got, some people pick the damnedest places to start a fight.
Is that a quote from the movie? It sounds like one.
Don't know. I mean, damnedest sounds like something that Jack Burton would have said. I don't know if that line, though, is lifted from the movie.
I had visions of, for whatever reason, when I heard that line, it reminded me of the 1966 Adam West Batman, when he's like, when he's running around with the bomb and he's like, some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
So, next up we have, try to find a big reason before you visit a world of magic. And that one ends in an ellipsis. So, you know, there's mystery behind that one.
Oh, yeah.
Next up we've got, Jack Burton's in for some serious trouble and you're in for some serious fun.
That one's good. I like it.
That one sounds like a screwball comedy, though.
Yeah. You know? I mean, it's hard. We'll have to talk later, but like, I'm not sure exactly what genre this movie fits in, but.
No, I don't know what the tone is at all. Well, next up here, this one kind of says it all, is a mystical action adventure comedy kung fu monster ghost story.
That one, you hit right on the money. Right on the money right there.
Now, it tells us everything we need to know about the genre, but not what we need to know about the story, so let's go to Colin and do a 60-second synopsis.
I really struggled with the 60-second synopsis, because I feel like any synopsis of this movie cannot really tell you what it's about or what happened. Like, no synopsis of this movie could convey to you what you're about to watch, but I tried my best.
No, yeah, I can imagine just how challenging this one was for you.
All right, here we go. After winning a bet against his friend Wang, truck driver Jack Burton accompanies him to the airport to pick up his green-eyed fiancé in order to make sure he doesn't run off without paying up. Unfortunately for Wang, his reunion with his childhood sweetheart is interrupted by the Lords of Death, a Chinese street gang who abduct her as she arrives. After chasing the Death Lords and finding themselves in the middle of a war between two ancient Chinese gangs, Jack and Wang come face to face with the Thunder Buddies and their leader Lo Pan, a demon ghost man who wants to take Wang's future bride for himself so that he can use her to become flesh and blood once more. Will Jack and Wang be able to stop Lo Pan before it's too late? Will Jack get his truck back? Will Wang actually pay up? Let's find out on another episode of I Used to Like This One.
Nice. Yeah, I know when you reached out to me and said, hey, we should do this. Like I said at the top, I hesitated about whether I have actually seen this, because in my head, this was Escape from New York and Escape from L.A. That's what this was in my head, was this was a Kurt Russell snake movie, mm-hmm. you know, but I realized that I don't know a whole lot of Kurt Russell. He's one of these guys that when he shows up in a movie like Guardians of the Galaxy 2, it's like, ah, Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
You know, I recently watched a documentary, series of documentaries on Disney Plus, where it was the Imagineering story mm-hmm. of how they created Disney. And they would flash back to young Kurt Russell doing some of these classic World of Disney things. And it's like, oh my God, right? Yes, he's the kid actor. But I really don't know him. And it was because I was escaping it with the Escape From movies that when I got into this, I must have written in my notes, what the fuck am I watching, a half dozen times, at least. Because it's like, this is not Escape from New York. So what about you? Like, I know you don't have any past experience with this movie, but, like, you know, what is your knowledge of Big Trouble in Little China before now?
Yeah, so I had no knowledge of what the movie was actually about.
Yeah.
I had just kind of heard about it. I have some friends who like it. And I don't know what happened, but I must have liked something, a post on Facebook that had to do with it, and I didn't realize it. But in my, like, when you go to the groups tab on Facebook,
yeah.
One of my suggested groups is the Big Trouble in Little China, like, fan club. Oh. So I always see these posts about it, like, the storm gods or whatever they are and all that stuff. And
what have you clicked on Facebook that would send that kind of targeted ad to you, or like targeted suggestion? Do you have a lot of friends in that group?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of is I have one friend
okay.
who he just posts like lots of pop culture things.
Yeah.
And you know, sometimes I like them and sometimes I whatever, but I feel like the only thing I can think of that would have hooked me onto this algorithm is that I liked one of those posts without
okay.
really know. Just thought it was funny, something but really he had
shared.
No
yeah, okay.
Yeah, really had no idea what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I've just been seeing these posts for months now, and I've always been like, oh, that's an interesting. Looks like an interesting movie, and I had heard a while back that they were planning to do a remake or a sequel and have The Rock. Like, The Rock play Jack Burton.
Oh, okay.
Which, I mean, we'll talk about that later, because I think that'd be pretty good. That might be actually the coolest movie ever, but anyways. But yeah, that was really all I knew about it. I had just kind of heard of it, but I had never really watched it.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, I was at a garage sale, and this lady was selling DVDs and Blu-rays for $1, and they had Big Trouble in Little China unopened, still in the plastic wrap
oh,
from
wow.
HMV.
Oh, price tag and everything. Or
yeah, it was a two for 20.
Yeah,
that somebody must have just wanted to add to their collection. So I was like, I bought that movie. I bought Howard the Duck.
Oh,
which
think, yeah.
Which I think also might be one that we could watch on this show.
I think so. We'll get Josh back, because Josh has been talking about that one lately.
Yeah. And to go full circle, I also bought Roadhouse and added that to my collection. So
nice.
There we go. But yeah, similar to you, I also have no real knowledge of Patrick Swayze, no real knowledge of Kurt Russell's like filmography at all, other than when he shows up in Fast and the Furious and when he shows up in the Marvel franchise there.
Yeah, like other than the Escape from movies, the only thing that I can really think of him for is Captain Ron, which was a Goldie Hawn comedy. Yeah. Other than that, I know he did some old Disney movies, but I don't know which ones they were. Like, I can't, like, were they Swiss Family Robinson or movies like that? But yeah, no, I just, he's a name I know. And when it comes to this movie, I can picture the cover of this movie.
Yeah.
Walking past it all the time in video stores, him with those knee-high boots and the tank top and the gun in his hand,
yeah.
You know, but I had no idea I was in for this kind of ride.
Yeah, I was shocked when you told me you had never seen it. I just saw it and I was like, oh, I guarantee you this is a Sean movie. I was like, oh, this is for sure a lock. We could do this one.
Yeah, yeah. So let's jump into Big Trouble in Little China. It's directed by John Carpenter, which I must say was something that took me by surprise as well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I watched the movie and then I went and started looking up my stuff on IMDb and the interwebs and all that. And when I saw those taglines that I read earlier, I'm like, well, I'm glad I didn't read this. Because even when I saw John Carpenter's name in the credits on screen, I thought, oh, he's out of his element. I figured it was just going to be a non-creature movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I was wrong. But I'm glad I didn't read those taglines that had, like, the World of Magic and the Kung Fu Monster movie one or Ghost Story.
Yeah.
Because I went into it a little less tainted than I would have if I had read those taglines first. And it definitely would have told me at that point that, no, I've never seen this movie. Mm-hmm. Produced by Larry Franco and written by Gary Goldman, David Z. Weinstein, and W.D. Richter, who gets the adaptation credit. And we open this movie on Egg Shen, played by Victor Wong, who is busy telling the police that black magic or Chinese sorcery does in fact exist, and that a man named Jack Barton, well, he's just a goddamn hero. And then we move on to meet the man himself as he drives a big rig and calling himself the Pork Chop Express over the CB radio. And this is Jack Barton, played by Kurt Russell. I read that he turned down Highlander to be in this movie. He could have been the Connor McLeod part. He could have been the man.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting. I mean, I can't imagine Kurt Russell in Highlander to me, but
yeah.
But I'm also, I've never seen the movie. I'm just thinking of the TV show.
Yeah.
And how serious that guy who plays Duncan is.
Yeah. Well, the movies definitely have like a campy aspect to them.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Alternate casting possibilities for Jack Burton were Jack Nicholson, Clint Eastwood, and Jeff Bridges.
Jeff Bridges would work.
Yeah.
I feel like Jeff Bridges would have been hilarious.
Yeah. So what do you think of fast-talking CB radio Jack Burton? Is Jack Burton a cool character? Because he does have one very cool moment.
Yeah.
But other than that, this guy is just, he's kind of a dummy.
Yeah.
You know?
He's so, for the most part, like a bumbling idiot. But he has his moment. He reminds me of, like, and I kind of read this, I think, on Wikipedia or whatever, but it's like he thinks he's Indiana Jones.
Okay.
But he lacks the follow through and the ability of Indiana Jones.
That kind of sums it up, yeah. I mean, you know, like we said right at the beginning there, I don't know what the tone of this movie is. And for me, watching this movie, a lot of the times I was getting two very different but very strong vibes from it. One of them was Mortal Kombat.
Yes, yes, thank you.
And the other one was Army of Darkness. Because some of the lines are delivered in just such an over-the-top, melodramatic way that I'm like, Jack Burton could have been played by Bruce Campbell, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. I definitely, with the, I was going to call those guys, like, the Storm guys, like, when I first saw them, probably the reason why I wanted to watch the movie was just because they reminded me of Raiden, and I was like, oh, what's this about?
Yeah.
But now that you say it, the movie definitely has that Army of Darkness vibe. For whatever reason, when I watched it, it kept reminding me, and not this is it's in no way a similar movie, but it gave me a similar vibe as The Princess Bride.
Okay.
And I'll explain what I mean. But like, I was trying to figure out, is the movie satirizing other things? Like, is it, like, it almost seemed kind of like a spaghetti western to me, where it's like sending up like this action martial arts genre in the same way that Princess Bride is sending up this like over the top fairy tale romantic, those types of tropes.
Well, see, I wouldn't necessarily even go spaghetti western, because one of the other thoughts that I had watching this one was it's a second-rate kung fu movie with a white lead,
yeah,
is what it is. And it's kind of like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Kung Fu Hustle.
No.
Kung Fu Hustle is this movie that, in a way, it kind of sends up. Like, it's a comedy kung fu movie.
Okay.
And it kind of pokes fun at the Hidden Dragon, or Hidden Tiger. No, what is it?
Crouching Tiger,
Hidden Dragon. Yeah, it sends up those wire fighting, but like, it's such an amazing action movie to watch, but it's hilarious.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that's kind of how I thought about this one. I mean, I don't know if I'd go as far as hilarious, but it definitely had that feeling of, are they poking fun at other kung fu movies because they've got like this American side to it with the lead in the movie? I don't know.
Yeah, well, that was kind of the thing, because I was watching with my wife, and there were multiple times where we would both look at each other and just be like, the acting is so bad at points that it just seems like they're doing it on purpose.
Yep.
Like, it's meant to be, like, there's specifically the one scene with, like, Gracie, I think it's right before they go to the brothel, like, after they've left the airport and escaped and everything, yeah, and they're in that apartment, and it's like, they're like talking about Lopan, and she's like, you mean David Lopan, the like underworld's greatest blah blah blah, and it's just,
oh
like,
my god, the exposition dumps are out of control,
yeah,
because like, there was another one in that scene where they're talking about the place that they have to go. Oh, what was it called again? I don't remember. What I think you said it in your 60 second synopsis even, but the place. Oh yeah, the Wing Collie Exchange was what it was. Have I ever heard of David Lopan? You mean the most dangerous? Yeah, like you said. But then the Wing Collie Exchange.
Yeah.
You mean that den of cutthroat men? That was the other one that came out. Yeah.
Yeah, and so like moments like that, I was like, it just seems so intentional.
Yeah.
That it has to. It's either just like. Like, it's just a writing mechanism that they use in the 80s, and they're like, we need to force feed this to people,
yeah,
so they can have an understanding, or it's like a comedic thing where they're just like, oh, I don't know, like they need to get it out.
Well, yeah, that was another reason why I was getting the Army of Darkness vibes too. One was because of the wheelchair scene, because it's like,
yeah,
what the what's going on now is when he's about to fall backwards into that Silence of the Lambs pit and manages to push himself forward. But there was also that scene after they've escaped with all the women from the brothel, and they're like in the sewers or whatever. And each person that comes through the little waterfall, Kim Cattrall's or Gracie picks them up and says, you know, where's Wang? You know, and then she picks up the next person, and it's Wang, and then it's like, where's Jack? And then, like, it's just, yeah, it's this, I didn't understand what was going on at that point. Like, are they trying to do the rules of three, that the more that she does this, the funnier it gets? Like, but
yeah,
it was another over-the-top acting choice that she was making.
Yeah, I feel like the movie, it's clearly action comedy.
Yeah,
but I'm still not sure if it ends there, or if it was, like you were saying, meant to be like a send up of the martial arts,
yeah,
like some sort of martial arts films of the time.
Well, see, and it's interesting that you said spaghetti western, because I guess the original version of this script had something to do with the story taking place in the like 1880s or something in Old West America.
Okay,
and so it was adapted to modern day San Francisco. but maybe that tone was still there from what you know, what was it from the original script.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me when you consider Jack, because Jack, I've never watched a John Wayne movie. I've only, like, seen clips, but
yeah,
he gives me the impression of, like, a bad John Wayne at times.
Uh-huh.
Like, when he's talking to people and he's just, like, this forceful, like, cocksure American man.
Yeah. Yeah, you could definitely see him calling someone out in the middle of Main Street, high noon.
Yeah.
And then losing.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so you brought up the Raiden from Mortal Kombat idea. So I don't want to come across as culturally insensitive, considering they actually do seem to be handling, like, the racial subject matter with some sort of dignity in this movie. But those hats, the exaggerated rice field, the wicker hats, and their strange assortments of blades these guys carry, are those real? Is this real Asian costuming that they've got, or is it exaggerated? Like, it just... I didn't know what to make of that.
I felt like those hats were too big.
Yeah.
Like, if you compare them to, like, Raiden's hat...
Yeah.
Raiden's hat is this, like, it's kind of like the normal one you'd see, like the triangle looking one.
Yeah.
But it's like, these ones are over their eyes so much, I don't feel like they would, I don't know, they don't seem like they would be good for farming or anything like that. Maybe they're some sort of ceremonial garb.
Yeah, well, because they definitely wouldn't be good for fighting. Yeah. Oh my god, like, it's like, yeah, you'd be blind. But yeah, I didn't know what to make of those. I wasn't sure about that. But we've got the two Asian street gangs. Why does one of them look so much more well-funded than the other? Like, the yellow gang, they all seem to have matching weapons, whereas the red gang, which by the way has Al Leong on it, so shout out to our buddy Al Leong. But they've got like Tommy guns and six shooters and a meat cleaver. Like, like, what's with the red team that they got going on? Of course they're going to, like, team up with the yellow team later because they're the ones that are organized, but
yeah, the red team seem to be, to me, more like Americanized street gang style.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the yellow team, they just seem more, I guess, old school, maybe, like, the old school, like, ninja.
They're the Foot Clan.
I mean, they're not Japanese, I guess, but the Foot Clan, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of like Ninja Turtles when the Foot Clan starts, like, adopting the street kids.
Yeah.
I don't know if I missed it. Like, I know that they explain the two, like, in passing when Wang and Jack are in the truck, they explain what the two gangs are.
Oh yeah, another big exposition dump.
Yeah, I didn't really understand how the gangs connect. And I watched the movie a couple of times. I'm not sure I ever understood how either of the gangs connect to Lo Pan.
Yeah.
Or if they're just completely separate and there's something else.
And the guys that abducted his fiance in the airport, were they part of one of these gangs? Because they weren't wearing colors. He did have those amazing white sunglasses with the slit in them. But, like, were they wearing gang colors? I don't think they were. So which gang is working for Lo Pan? The red gang, I guess, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure, because those guys were the Lords of Death.
Yeah.
But they take her to the brothel, which seems unrelated from the rest of the story, because then Lo Pan's lightning boys come and they steal her from there.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe that one girl at the brothel, like,
This is why I kept writing down, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, I'm still having trouble putting the pieces together over how Lo Pan even knew about that girl and where she was.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know who was feeding him that information.
Yeah.
Or if, like, how he'd even heard about her.
Yeah.
Because the gang who takes Miao Yin.
I think it's Miao Yin. Yeah.
The gang who were actually there to abduct Gracie's friend.
The reporter?
Who's also coming.
Like, Margot?
Not the reporter. Okay. She had that. There was a second Asian woman who was coming off the plane that Gracie was there to. I think
okay,
it had to do with whatever her story, the story that she's writing about, which is also like a quickly tossed aside.
Yeah, see, I guess that's somewhere where I ended up getting confused too, because I thought coincidentally they were there for the same Asian girl. I thought that's what it ended up being, because she comes to them in the apartment later on, so it's like she seems to already know these people. Like Egg and Eddie and but I mean, and shout out to Eddie. Oh my God. Eddie is my MVP for this movie. I loved Eddie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know how, see, now that you've brought that part up, it confuses me even more, because it's like, okay, I figured everyone was there for Miao Yin. I mean, she must be famous. She's like a green-eyed Asian. So everybody knows about her. I don't know.
I don't know. I kind of maybe for clarity's sake, I guess that makes sense. Ultimately, Miao Yin is the one who gets abducted and sets the story on its eventual course.
Yeah. Yeah, and so we get a car chase with the semi truck through back alleys.
Yeah, the most the most maneuverable semi truck I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to say that in the beginning part where they are like making their bets with each other, where they're gambling, and you know, we have the nothing or double moment where he says that he can cut that bottle in half. At first I didn't realize that was Kurt Russell sitting there.
Yeah.
with the baseball cap on, and then he starts talking, and I'm like, oh, okay, this scene is related to the Jack that we just saw in the truck.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so now they're like buddies, but are they buddies? Because he just wants his money back is what it kind of seems like is the motivation for the movie.
Yeah, their turn into friendship is on a dime. I did not... There's a moment like before that when he's like doing the nothing or double thing where I was like, they don't seem like friends... to me.
Yeah,
like
friendly rivals is like, the biggest I would
angry.
Give them. Yeah, I don't know. But then all of a sudden, like, he gets mixed up in, hey, run that guy down in your truck. Just keep going, you know?
Yeah, probably one of the grossest moments in that opening little foray is after Jack gets blinded by Lopan, and they go in that back alley, and in order to restore his sight, Wang, like, throws nasty alley water in his face.
Yeah.
It's like, you could not pay me any amount of money to let someone just splash alley water in my face. Thank you very much.
This will help. Yeah. Will it, though? Come on.
Just make you more blind.
that's what I would think, yeah.
Well, I was trying to think, is this movie is post... Police Academy for Kim Cattrall, right?
Yes, it is. I read that the producers were actually worried about casting Kim Cattrall because it was like this, and I think Porky's is something else she's known for, and they're like, oh, well, we can't cast this comedy actress in this movie. And it's kind of like, well, yeah, but I think this movie is a comedy ?
Yeah. She's gorgeous. I think Kim Cattrall is my 80s movie crush.
Yeah. Well, I did read that the studio did want a female rock star to be the lead of that role.
Hmm.
Like, I don't know, Stevie Nicks or some shit. I you know, I can't even think.
She's the only one I could think of.
Yeah, from that era at least. Or Ellen Barkin was also a possibility for playing Gracie.
Huh.
And I read for Wang Chi, who was played by Dennis Dunn, Jackie Chan was a possibility to play him, but his English wasn't strong enough.
I mean, that would have been interesting. Like, I kind of wonder if Jackie Chan and him doing his own stunts and that kind of stuff would have left a little bit more credibility to some of the martial arts scenes.
Yes.
Because in the big like fight scene at the end of the movie, it gets pretty campy.
Yeah, and it feels very staged. Very staged. Yeah. You know, like you can almost see them counting it out in their head. Okay, arm up, arm forward, back block. You know, like you can almost see them, like it's a choreographed dance, but it really doesn't look as intense as some fight scenes you see nowadays.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess you need more shaky cam.
I was trying to remember, do Jack and Gracie, they don't end up together by the end of the movie, do they?
No. Well, see, that's the thing, is that kiss in the elevator, I have to say, is so unearned. But I do appreciate the touch that Jack has lipstick on his face for the whole next scene with Lopan. But the thing about that is when I said that he has one super cool moment, it's at the end when Jack is leaving and someone says, "Aren't you going to kiss her goodbye?" And he goes, "Nope." And like, I'm just like, did I just witness the coolest move ever? Like, this is Han Solo not saying "I love you," saying "I know."
Yeah.
I mean, this is that level of cool that he's like, "Nope," and he just does the old Irish exit and he's out of there. You know, like, it's that was my, so no, they don't end up together. I because she's the one that says, you know, "Well, if you got a bigger rig and we had a little apartment in the back," like, he's offering to, you know, she's offering to come with him. And he's like, "Nope, I got my sugar. I got what I wanted."
Yeah. I was expecting, based on how the movie starts with Egg and the FBI or whatever that law enforcement office is, and they're talking about explosions and all this.
Yeah.
I thought the movie was going to come to a way bigger climax.
Yeah.
Like, with, like, massive, like, full block explosions and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It left me wanting a little bit on that end.
Yeah.
Everything happens underground. I'm not even sure that anybody would have really noticed.
Well, I mean, that might be the kind of the point, though, because, you know, it's this whole underground scene.
Yeah.
Or this whole underworld, you know? I don't know. Yeah. And, like, I'm just wondering about, like the David Lopan character. I mean, when we first meet him, like, not when he's standing in the alley, and I didn't even connect that it was the same guy actually standing in the alley the first time I watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, when we do meet him, he's like this large-sized Asian Yoda, you know, like, where he just wheels out in his chair. Yeah, and I mean, that was one of my first, you know, what the fuck moments of this movie, was just like, okay, what is going on at this point? But isn't he supposed to be, like, this gangster? Like, how is he, like, the head of the criminal underworld, but he's also this recluse?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess maybe it's, like, gangs run on, like, a system of, like, respect where you can just, like, it's more like reverence, I guess, where it's feasible to me that he could just operate the gang without ever having to, like, he's, like, the high up, but there would be, like, his generals or whatever who do all the managing and that kind of stuff, and like he just, like, really rakes in the profits.
How regularly do you think he goes out as 7 foot Lopan? Like, is this just like a special time of year or something? Like,
yeah,
is it a full moon? Is that why there's so much gang activity this night? Or, like, you know, why now? Why right now?
Well, that's the one thing about the kind of like myth mythology or whatever is happening that I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Like, what is it about right now? Is it like, oh, a green-eyed woman has crossed the threshold of the Pacific Ocean and come here and now we sense her and it's time to put our plan into action. This hasn't happened in centuries.
Yeah.
It's not like why do they just appear during that gang fight? Like, what is it? Like, you see those two guys make these weird hand signals.
Yeah.
And at first I thought they were calling them forth.
Uh-huh.
But they seem to be on the opposite team, so I don't know. I don't know what happened. Like, I don't
yeah,
even
like
I don't,
a third party.
I don't even know why those why they end up showing up in that alley to fight and wreak havoc and all that. And then with Lopan, I thought he was just some sort of like ghost, or he was like attached to something. Like, but nothing is like, no one rubs a lamp or, you know, opens a door that they shouldn't have, or uncorks a bottle that they shouldn't have.
There wasn't an earthquake that, you know, we're in San Francisco. Yeah. You could have had an earthquake and like the ground split open and these forces of evil came out. I don't know.
No, you're right. That is a very glaring hole in the plot that it's just like, why? It doesn't make sense why any of this started at this specific moment in time.
Yeah, like if we thought that the amulet in Monster Squad was a little bit random, you know, of how it got there and everything, like this is even more random, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, Lopan, I didn't even realize, I must have missed it the first watch, like I didn't see him as his like beef jerky Yoda old man self. But I didn't really understand that. Like, is he able to... Has he been alive for just thousands of years?
Yeah, see, I don't know. Like...
And it's like he can only be young when he goes incorporeal. But then I also don't get, because he turns from that guy into the ghost.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the movie, when he's stabbing Miao Yin to, like, become again flesh and blood himself, that is the body that is... So where's the old man?
Yeah.
I didn't get it.
Yeah.
I also just kept waiting for him to just be like, Cartwright form? Well, because every time I heard his voice, all I thought about was that episode of Seinfeld in the restaurant. Yeah. And just like, it's so good.
And then meanwhile, we've got like all these people that are human looking, even if one of them's like 7.5 feet tall. And we've got, you know, all these guys that... You know, the elemental whatever powers that they have. But then we've also got like these other creatures, like the giant monster that takes Gracie hostage at one point, or the eyeball creature.
Yeah, that eyeball guy was gross.
All of a sudden, I'm like, where am I? What am I watching? What's going on?
Yeah, it's like you're in, you know, that's when the movie became like part Labyrinth to me, where you're like, what is... What's the thought? But I did appreciate that they were all like practical. Well, except the eyeball guy, I'm pretty sure he was computer generated. But
I don't think he was. I think he was like blue screened in, but he was probably a puppet at some point. Yeah.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah.
Or stop motion maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I did like those practical puppets.
Yeah.
But they're also not really explained all that well.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if I needed to understand more about, like, Chinese mythology to really get it, but they kind of just happen, and you're like, okay, and then you just have to move on with the rest of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
I also really appreciate, well, I shouldn't say appreciate, but I like that Jack insists on just fighting with a knife.
Yeah.
Even though it, at times you can just tell it's the fakest plastic knife ever.
Especially when he has it in his teeth.
Yeah, especially when he has it in his teeth. But it's also not even big. Like, it's not a Crocodile Dundee, like, massive, machete knife.
Yeah, it's a 4-inch blade. Yeah, I liked that scene where he was, like, crawling through the caverns. And, yeah, I could totally tell it was a rubber knife. But then he slides down the slide head first. Why do you slide down a slide head first? I mean, that seems like the most reckless idea around. And then that lands in the pile of fish or whatever. What's going on? Where am I? I'm not sure what I watched. I mean, it's... when they escape at the end, they find Jack's truck again. And my first thought was, oh yeah, the truck. Like, that's what started all this. Him trying to find his stolen truck. Like, everyone else had... That's the other thing that I didn't get. Like, I mean, he's all after his truck, and everyone else has, like, this side mission. And it just kind of turns out, well, if you're going there, then I guess, you know, I can get my truck back or whatever. But, yeah, when the truck came back into the script, I'm like, oh yeah. I completely forgotten. Oh man.
I mean, Jack's motivation changes. I'm not even sure if at the end, does Wang ever actually end up paying him the money that he owes?
Yeah, he does. He gave him extra too.
Okay.
Yeah, because he said
perfect.
He said like it's double what I owe you or something like that, you know.
Oh right. But yeah. Yeah, I did think that the truck thing was a little bit needless, I guess. Like, I thought his motivation was just like, oh, I need to make sure you pay me my money, and then all of a sudden it's like he just needs his truck back.
Yeah. But his truck, Colin, well, his truck is a Freightliner, and that means it's time for Sponsorship Corner. So always on the lookout for product placements in movies. This week, Big Trouble in Little China is brought to you by Freightliner, Ford, and Harley-Davidson, BC Okanagan Fruit and Butterfly Apples, Peking Beer, Camel Cigarettes, Puma and Wells Shoes, and Coca-Cola. Plus a shout-out to the fictional Lee's Citrus Exchange, Dragon of the Blackpool Cantonese Cuisine, Wing Kong Trading Company, and Egg Foo Young Tours. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Nice.
Yeah, the office for Egg Foo Young Tours is actually Fire Hall 23, which we talked about back in The Mask, which is the same fire hall that they used in Ghostbusters. So,
man, that place has gotten some action. There's something, this movie magic is happening in there.
That's right. Nice big open garage for people. An old garage. If you need one, come here.
Yeah.
But, like, he's got, like, a fire pole to the caverns. Like, I don't understand Egg's place either. Or was that in his place? Like, where was that? Like, they opened that one cupboard and there's the fire hall that the fire pole that goes back down into the into the caverns.
Yeah, I thought that was Egg's place.
Yeah.
I didn't understand Egg either. Like, he's a sorcerer. Of some, like,
maybe,
like, right off the top, he's like talks about like how he knows magic, and then I thought he was gonna end up being more of a, like, he just spends the rest of the movie throwing flash bombs around,
like
he's like a weird Chinese Gandalf,
almost. he should be like the yin to Lopan's yang, you know, that's what, you know, he should have been the one that rises up at the end. Because we don't want to have cops come along and look for these people, because cops have better things to do than get killed. I love that line.
Yeah.
Egg does have another one of my favorite lines, though. It's like when they're getting out of there towards the end, and Egg is at the top of the hole, and Jack says, "How'd you get up there?" And his answer is, "Wasn't easy." Like, just so matter of fact, like, I don't know why, it just, it's like, yeah, okay, good answer. I like that. I love that line.
Yeah, that's good. I did, once Gracie gets involved as, like, the second green-eyed woman, and Lopan decides that, you know, he's going to just take both and then, you know, marry one, kill the other, so that his prophecy or whatever can be satisfied.
Oh yeah, but dude's like, straight up trying to get a threesome before that happens, you know?
Yeah. But is there some weird, I'm just gonna what is it about Gracie that she always, like, Miao Yin is always under the thrall.
Yeah.
You know, she's like laying down, floating in the room. She's always like, she's under hypnosis 100% of the time.
Yeah.
But Gracie is, like, in and out.
Yeah, why can she snap out of it? Yeah.
I was wondering if that's some weird subliminal racism about the mind of the white woman is too powerful for this.
Like, that's right. Yeah, she's not demure. She's a very strong American woman. So,
yeah,
she won't play into the... I don't know, maybe it's, like, you know, weak-minded fools and Jedis. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, it could be some underlying racism that I gave it too much credit at the top, saying that it was that it seemed to handle it all sensitively. Yeah, I know, I also just didn't even really understand the plans. Like, when he's sent in with his, like, with his bumbling nerdy guy looking for the green-eyed,
he's gonna be a John.
Yeah. And it's like, I can't go in there, they know me. Well, I can't go in there, they know me. And they send him in, but it's like, what are you guys doing? Like, and like you said earlier, why is she at this brothel? I don't know. But that outfit, though, is the same outfit that Kurt Russell wears in a movie called Used Cars, though. So there's another Kurt Russell movie for you. Yeah,
I was gonna say, I don't know if this is Kurt Russell's best movie. I'd have to watch some more in terms of his acting ability. But there is something about that this part of the movie when he's in the brothel that I found very impressive. Like, I just thought he played a good character.
Yeah, it was one of my favorite moments right there too. Is, you know, because other than that, it seemed like he was over the top. Or getting knocked out by cement. That scene where he shoots into the ceiling and gets hit in the head by chunks of cement. Like, he really doesn't do much to help the fights at all. Like, you know, the other guys are out there kicking ass and, you know, he's knocked out or something. Or he takes out one guy.
Well, I love when he I think it's when him and Wang are tied up, and then Thunder comes in, and he, like, goes behind him with the knife and is like, not so fast, and then he gets knocked back, and the guy goes after Wang, and then he jumps on his back. He's like, let's try this again. And then he's still, that's when he gets blown back on the chair and stuff. But
well, I gotta say, so like, funny. What kind of bargain basement henchman is Lo Pan hiring if they can't even find a knife in his boot?
Yeah.
And what I found funny is in that scene, they're tied up and they've got the blindfolds and they take them into the other room. And then he cuts the blindfolds off each of their eyes, you know, like it's basically, well, shit, I don't need these anymore. You know, like I'll just cut this blindfold off. And then they re-blindfold them. It's like, well, maybe you shouldn't have cut that blindfold. Yeah. Now you're just wasteful of blindfolds. Think about the environment.
They had a massive blindfold budget in 1986.
Yeah,
for henchmen.
There you go. Yeah, they bought them in bulk. It's like, well, I'm never going to use these otherwise, so we might as well just slice them off people's faces.
Yeah. That is another hilarious scene, though. I was just thinking about when in the final battle when Jack fights that armored samurai guy, and it's like the slowest rollback, and he pushes the knife through his boot and stabs the guy in the chest.
Yeah.
But then it gets stuck in his armor.
Yeah, and he's left out of commission while everyone else finishes everyone else off, right?
Yeah.
Was it him or was it Wang? I'm trying to remember which one gets the moment at the end where they catch... Oh, it's him. He catches the knife and throws it back and ends up, like, you know, skewering Lo Pan's head. And it's like, okay, so does Jack have superpowers then? Like, catching a knife, that's impressive. Like, go Jack. It's the one good move you've done in this movie.
Well, that's like the payoff of the beginning when Wang tries to slice the bottle and it flies at Jack's head and he just catches it.
Oh yeah, right. Yes. Oh, I didn't even think of that. See, it's like I forgot about the truck. I forgot about the bottle catch. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's just the master of the fast catch.
Yeah. It's like a couple weeks ago when I was talking about in Breakfast Club with the Coke can that Ali Sheedy caught. Same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I like I'll take that bet, but you use this bottle. Mm-hmm. So did Wang have the other one scored already or something? Like, was it a trick bottle?
He must have. I mean, that's I feel like that's what they're, at least that's what he's alluding to. But I mean, we never get to find out. It would have been funny if you just saw later on the bottle like roll and split.
Yeah. Yeah. Or when he takes it out of his hand, even at that point for it to like fall apart.
Yeah.
See, the comedy's there. You guys just didn't lean enough into it.
Yeah.
You were too busy deciding what kind of movie you are.
Yeah, and I don't know if they ever really land on it.
No.
Like, I'm still, as we've been talking, I've been trying to think about what type of, like, how, and I think that's, I remember reading similarly to The Princess Bride in Cary Elwes's, his, like, little biography there that he did about it, that was a real big reason why they struggled to market that movie was because they couldn't explain to anybody what it was,
yeah,
or what it was about, or like what you're going to watch, or what's gonna, like, what kind of, you know, like people think about movies like, oh, I want to go watch an action movie, I want to see a rom-com, I want to see a comedy. But I would say both of these movies fall in this like weird ambiguous genre of like this movie is action comedy, but it's also fantasy.
Yeah.
And those don't always line up very well.
Yeah.
I can't say it's lined up very well here either, but
no, I don't think it has. Yeah.
But it would be, I would struggle very hard to tell somebody what kind of movie this was.
Yeah. Cause it felt like, I mean, even if I thought that it was like a little clumsy or a little over choreographed or, you know, they were obviously going for serious action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they put a lot into like lightning effects in this movie and stuff like that. I did read that when the lightning guy dies, the very last frame of like the lightning as it dissipates forms the Chinese character for the word carpenter.
Oh.
So it's like, so director puts his own name into the movie. But in the fighting, though, on top of the weird, clumsy fighting, there is also like that one fight where it's the air sword fight.
Yeah.
Where they're jumping back and forth and, you know, with like one strike at a time. But then they're kind of flying.
Yeah.
For a bit. Like, it's just, you know, so it's like, is it wire work? Like, what? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what to make of it. I mean, because, like, that fighting style, for one, like, that's just such an unnecessary expenditure of energy that those guys are using.
Yeah.
For one strike at a time. It's like Star Wars Episode 3, when Anakin and Obi-Wan are fighting on the river of lava.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's like they have to keep jumping from boulder to boulder. And so it's like there's barely any fighting actually happening there.
Yeah.
So that's how this one was for me. I don't know.
Yeah, I get that. I found it was just a little... That was the part where I'm like, okay, is this a send-up of martial arts movies?
Yeah.
Because there's parts of it that remind me of... like Dragon Ball Z, where it's just like the close up on the yelling face with the, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And then even when the one guy, there's thunder, lightning, wind is
and rain.
Rain. So
I thought it was rain.
Yeah. So when Rain gets stabbed and he's like, ooh, and you're like, okay, I guess.
Yeah.
The one thing I wanted to talk about was the end of the movie and the closing credits. Well, actually, first I want, in your was there ever plans for a sequel to this movie?
I didn't come across anything that said that. No,
because I thought that the ending definitely leaves it wide open. I don't really understand what the motivation is of the monsters.
Yeah,
but when, you know, after Jack leaves and then we see the furry wolfman guy show up, it's kind
of
like,
oh yeah, on the back of his truck. Yeah,
yeah, like I was almost, and then it's also like it doesn't pay off the beginning of the movie.
Yeah,
where they're like, what happened to Jack Burton? Like, we still don't know by the end of it. We know what he did.
Yeah,
but we don't know, we don't find out what happened to him or where he is or why people can't find him.
He's just hitting the road again. He's the littlest hobo. He's carrying on down the road, you know?
Nice.
He's the Incredible Hulk, you know? Do-do-do-do. Like, yeah. the creature crawling up the back of his truck, though, gave me vibes of that old Twilight Zone episode with William Shatner with the gremlin on the wing. Or, you know... Or like
the Simpsons.
Yeah, the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe tomorrow he'll try and settle down. Maybe tomorrow he'll just keep moving on.
Yeah. But yeah, you're totally right. Like, it feels set up for a sequel, but I don't know. I enjoyed how at the end, though, like his goodbye speech that he's doing on the Pork Chop Express, he says, you know, like, take his advice on a dark, stormy night when the lightning's crashing, the thunder's rolling, rain's coming down, which is just like a straight out reference to the three storms that he just finished, like the three bodyguards that he just finished taking out. So it's like, well, okay, I guess that's kind of clever. But I was so confused getting to that point that had to be pointed out to me in some IMDb trivia. Was it's like, oh yeah, okay, oh, that's who those guys were. And it made the second watch a little bit easier, because, like, yeah, they just dump so much exposition into your lap at any given time that if you're not paying close enough attention, it's like, oh, okay, I don't actually understand the story of any of these people involved.
Yeah.
And I still don't. I'm so confused.
Yeah, I was going to say, the only person who I really have an idea about is Jack.
Yeah.
Everyone else, I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't really fully understand how you got to be here.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand where you're going.
Well, yeah, like, there's even, like, the little side love story that they threw in with Eddie and Margot.
Oh, yeah.
They like each other, and so... now those characters are coupled up and Wang Chi has been reunited with Miao Yin and everyone's happily ever after. And our hero just drives off into the sunset.
And then at the end, we get one of my favorite things about 80s movies. And that's a song over the closing credits. That is the title track of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Performed and written by John Carpenter.
Really?
Yeah. There's a music video as well, and people should go watch it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. We'll be posting that on our social media. That's for sure. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, like, is Jack the hero of the movie, or is he the sidekick the whole time?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, Jack...
Like, he set out in that opening interrogation scene to be the hero. Jack Burton is a hero, is what we're told right off the bat. But we see all along that, no, he was just... He was the Robin to the Batman. Like, he... Yeah, I don't know.
I would say that Jack is the hero, but he's not the protagonist. I think Wang is the protagonist.
Yeah.
Like, Wang moves the story, but Jack is the guy who's there to save the day.
Yeah, and get his truck back.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That is Big Trouble in Little China. Now, Colin, prepare to have your mind blown. On IMDb, it scored 7.3 out of 10. Has a Metascore of 53. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 74% on the tomato meter. Critics, 74%. And then an audience rating of 82%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like a semi-truck running you over in an alley. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, here's one from Anthony Gray, a Google user reviewer. He gives the movie 5 out of 5 stars and says, "If I run across old high school friends, it's likely we'll start quoting this film. A fun film with nonstop action that's completely self-aware. Over-the-top characters mixed with OTT fights and myth." I think OTT means over-the-top.
Yeah, okay.
"Still enjoy watching to this day."
Yeah, I mean, he says self-aware, so... I mean, he gets that vibe as well, is that they know that this isn't all that serious. That's where I get Army of Darkness from, right there, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Joe Delarios says, "One of the best action movies to come out of the 80s. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but its action scenes are cool, and it has a freaking beholder in it with Chinese wizards fighting an American truck driver. What more can you want?"
A freaking beholder. Is that the eye guy?
I don't know.
Okay.
Orinoco says 5 out of 5 stars. "Why do people feel the need to write out the full synopsis of a film in its reviews? Guaranteed 98% of the people coming to this section have already read it, lol. My review? Stop reading the reviews and watch the film. 100% 80s awesomeness. Why are you still here reading this comment? Put the film on already." Stephen Baum says 5 out of 5 stars. "Truly the reason for movies. Entertainment spelled in capitals. As a martial artist, this is great. And also a Kurt Russell fan. Love this movie every time I watch it."
The martial arts to me just, it didn't, I don't know.
Yeah, I would say to me the martial arts are probably like one of the more lacking pieces of this movie.
Yeah. Even Sonya Blade's fight in the first Mortal Kombat was better than a lot of the ones in this one.
Yeah. All right. Here's a couple from Rotten Tomatoes that I'll end on. So Mark H. says 5 out of 5 stars. "One of my most favorite movies that I loved when I was a young kid and still love today at 40 years old. It's a classic in so many ways, from the comedy to the touch of horror and some mysticism to boot. A must-see for anyone that loves a good action movie with humor, a touch of horror, and a lot of fun." There's one, like, I don't know if this is true. There's a review here that credits Big Trouble in Little China for inspiring Mortal Kombat.
Oh. Well, see, I did wonder whether Ed Boon and John Tobias were fans of this movie. Because, like, I see a lot of Raiden. Or, well, like even the whole idea, it feels very much like, you know, well, if you want to save the world, we have to go on this weird-ass fight to the death.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, the last one is from Francesco J. Says, "So much fun, the ultimate B-movie. This is grammatically incorrect. So much fun, the ultimate B-movie. For me, this is movie canon." "May the wings of liberty never lose a feather. Silly, campy, and it doesn't even really star Kurt Russell. But Carpenter couldn't tell the studios that."
He's the sidekick.
Interesting.
Batman and Robin, not yeah. Robin and Batman. Right on. So yeah, we've got, I mean, except for the Metascore of 53, like, we've got mid-70s to 80s. I mean, it's, I don't know. What do you think of Big Trouble in Little China, Colin?
I don't know. The most I can say is I was happy to have finally watched it.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting. I don't think it would be a movie that I would rush out to watch again.
Yeah.
However, if the rumors about The Rock possibly, like, rebooting it are true, I would 100% go watch that movie.
Yeah.
Because I think that would be awesome. I don't know. I would give the movie, like, I'd probably give it a 50%.
Yeah.
I don't think it's bad, but I definitely don't think it's good.
Yeah.
It was entertaining enough, even though it's fairly nonsensical.
Yeah. I mean, I think I kind of have the same feeling I did even back with Mortal Kombat, but at least with Mortal Kombat, I had you and especially David there to answer questions because I didn't know enough about the backstory. And that's what I don't get is, except for the exposition dumps, I really don't understand what's going on in this movie at all.
Yeah.
But I don't know whether I hated it. I mean, like, this is definitely no Roadhouse.
Yeah.
Like, this is definitely not me coming in going, I've never seen this, and my God, I think I love this movie. This is one where it's just like, I think I kind of echo some of your sentiments where it's like, well, glad I saw it, but I don't know whether I'm going to, unless I come across a copy of this for $1 at a garage sale, I don't know if I would ever add it to my collection. You know, it's, Yeah, I don't know what to make of this movie at all. And it's even the fact that I didn't know what I was getting on board for.
Yeah.
Because as I was watching it, it's kind of like, okay, this is kind of a comedy. Oh, no, wait, it's kind of a martial arts movie. Oh, no, wait, it's kind of a comedy. No, it's action. Yeah, like, I just, back and forth where it's like, I don't know whether I'm sitting here watching an action movie or a comedy because it doesn't quite fully reach either.
Yeah, to be honest, if you had asked me what this movie was about or like a base plot line before I watched it, I would have thought that it was more akin to like Flash Gordon.
Okay.
Where it was like Kurt Russell is like your truck driver guy, and he like gets thrown into like another universe.
Yeah, okay.
Of like Chinese mysticism and magic and that, and has to figure things out.
Yeah, or sent back in time to Imperial China or something, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I realized that it all took place in the present, not our but like the present world.
Yeah.
That was where I was kind of like, "Oh, this is not what I thought at all."
Yeah. Like, yeah, I don't even know if I can go 50, but it's campy and it was fun. Like, it's just, this is one that I'm stuck on. I don't even know what to make of it. Maybe 50 is the way to go because it's like, yeah, if it was on, maybe I'd give it another shot. It's, yeah. I don't know.
Well, it's confounded us both, so I guess that's just where we'll leave it.
Yeah, I'm trying to come up with something big to end on, but nope, that's all I got. Yeah, I'm stunned. I'm still stunned by this movie. Well, there we go. That is Big Trouble in Little China, and that's our show for this week. Oh boy, if you liked that show, there are a few ways you can show us just how much you liked it. The easiest is to tell people. Word of mouth goes such a long way for a podcast trying to find an audience. Or you could become a producer of the show by donating to us and get out a shout out on the show for doing just that. Just like our executive producer, Joshua Blum. Just go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne and become part of our Patreon community. Or if financial support isn't your thing and you want to help us get noticed on podcast charts, maybe you could just take a couple minutes to log into whatever app it is to you listen to podcasts on. Give us the maximum amount of stars that app allows. Doesn't matter what you say in the review. It's not for our egos, but 5 stars really helps the algorithms find us and drive us up the charts and helps people find us.
And be sure to check out our website, www.IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. There you can find all the links to all of our social medias, as well as all our podcast episodes. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Like our posts, comment on them, share them with your friends. Yeah, If you want to talk to us, you can email us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com as well. Drop us a line and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening. And join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.